I remember winning the British Championship. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. I won the British Championship. I'm the best bodybuilder in the country.
In England.
Yes. But I came home to an apartment with no carpet on the floor. I had not a proper bed, just a mattress on the floor. Mm-hmm. It's almost like I knew I was going to do this. It sounds strange, but I knew something inside me knew I was doing something special. And when I got to be bodybuilding, I was like, this is it. This is the thing that's going to change my life. So, yes, I want people to respect me and what I did. So I guess that's ego.
How did you restrict your emotions when you saw, for example, a cold beer in the head competition? Or, I don't know, a great cake in front of you?
I see it as an obstruction to reaching my goal, so I have no interest in it.
You wanted money, you wanted glory, you wanted to prove yourself that you are better?
All of those things.
Hello, Dorian. Welcome to Mandaki Television. It's a huge, huge honor for me to meet you here. It's like I met Arnold, Bruce Lee, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Thank you to be here.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Okay. Dorian, why did you choose the strongest sport in the world, bodybuilding?
I'm not sure if I chose it or if it chose me, actually. I was doing karate. That was the first sport I did. And when I was doing karate, I was introduced to the weights. And I really felt it was me, you know? I kind of fell in love with it. And I was still at school at this point, but I left school, I left home, and I wasn't in the right, you know, circumstances, opportunity to do the sport. And I came back to it later. Why did I choose bodybuilding? It's something that appealed to me because I didn't really like team sports. Mm-hmm. And bodybuilding at this point, now you have coaches and trainers and so on, but at that point was very individual. It's only you training. You have to discover the best way to train, the best nutrition, the supplementations, all these things. So I took it as a challenge, and I like to push my body and see what's possible, really. I think that's what it was about.
When was the first day when you touched the gym?
The first day when I touched weights, I was still at school, like 16. But then I didn't left school at 16. I didn't train again until I was 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And this was in a youth detention facility. Mm-hmm. Youth detention center, we call it in England. So it's like a youth prison that I got sent to for a few months just for...
Why? Can you detect?
Just for being on the streets in the wrong place at the wrong time. Actually sounds a bit cliche, but it was in 1981, there was a lot of street unrest in UK. All the major cities had rioting and fighting with the police and so on about social conditions and the police actions and things like that. And I wasn't involved in that, but me and a friend got picked up later on in the wrong place, and we got sent to jail for this. So we were young kids in a kind of a gang, and the worst thing we ever did really is to get drunk and get into fights. So we weren't serious criminals, but anyway, I got sent to this facility, and there they tried to instill discipline into the youth and give you structure and all this stuff. So physical activity and weight training was part of it. And I noticed I was in a facility with around 300 guys, and I had the best physique in there, and I was one of the strongest and so on. So it was kind of a crossroads for me. I have something here that I really love and I can be good at, or I can be coming back to jail. So I chose to pursue bodybuilding when I was able, when I had stability, when I had an apartment to live in, and I had a job for income. Then I said, okay, I'm going to start bodybuilding, and I'm going to make this into something like a profession.
But why did you start it? You wanted money, you wanted glory, you wanted to prove yourself that you are better?
All of those things. All of those things. When I was a kid, my father died at 13, and I just felt like I didn't have any direction, any care. After my father died, my mom was trying to handle the situation on her own. So I want to do something where I have total control. Mm-hmm. I have control on my diet, I have control on my training, and it's me that's doing it. And I'm going to do something with my life which is very unusual, which is very different. And I always felt inside that I was different, that I was destined for something different. And this was something that was inside of me and growing as I got to be a teenager. I think deep down I knew I was not going to do the same as everybody else. I was not going to have a job. I was not going to lead a normal life. Everything around me, I couldn't relate to it. I didn't belong there. And I saw these guys in the magazines in America training and doing bodybuilding, and I dreamt that I could do this with my life and I could remove myself from the environment that I was in, which was very limited as far as people's expectations. They want to get a job, they want to get a house from the government, they have some kids, and you know, maybe that's good for a lot of people, but for me, I wanted to do something different. And I wanted to prove that I was different, and I wanted to change my life. And all those things I was able to do ultimately through bodybuilding.
How did you motivate yourself to be better?
How did I motivate myself to better? Just look around me. Mm-hmm. Just look around me at what life, the expectations of people and the life around me. I couldn't relate to it. I knew there was something better and something different. And when I started bodybuilding, yes, I had an apartment. I remember winning the British Championship. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. I won the British Champion. I'm the best bodybuilder in the country.
In England.
Yes. But I came home to an apartment with no carpet on the floor. I had not a proper bed, just a mattress on the floor. Mm-hmm. I had a TV that didn't work properly. And there's no TV stations outside my apartment. Asking for interview, there's no newspaper, there's no nothing. You know, I come home, I'm British champion, and I came home to the same circumstances. And but I knew if I kept going, I would be able to get out of that. So it was a combination of really changing my life and doing things, something special. And of course, finance is part of that. But I really believe if I put the amount of dedication and effort into business, for example, that I put into bodybuilding, mm-hmm. I would be a billionaire now.
Yes, you know? I always ask myself why the bodybuilders, professionals, are not billionaires.
Because it's not a huge sport. It's a niche sport with a relatively small audience compared to soccer.
Not to make money in sports. Yeah. To make money in business, because you know to train yourself, to motivate yourself, not to drink a beer, not to drink a Coke, not to... Yeah. Go outside with the women in the clubs. Why these professionals are not billionaires? Because they are huge persons.
Because they didn't put their energy into making money. They put their energy into building a physique, and maybe the byproduct of building that physique, they earn some okay money, but it's not too big compared to other sports. But you asked me, why did I do bodybuilding? Maybe if I found I was naturally very good with the football, I would have been a soccer player. Mm-hmm. You know, because you tend to go with what you're good at. And I was very naturally suited to bodybuilding, genetically, structurally, mentally, everything. This was the sport for me. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't play football, I couldn't do basketball. Maybe if I was good at those sports, I would have gone down that road. But I was always interested in physicality, and I was always very... as a kid, I used to ride everywhere in my bike. One time at school, we had a competition to see how many times around the 400 meters track you can run. Everybody else finished at 15. So if I won 16 times around, I would be the best. But I didn't. I did 45 times around the track. And the teacher who's witnessing said, "You must stop now, the Yates, because I have to go home." You know? So early on, I had something like physical resilience that's very unusual.
How can teenagers discover the sports they're made for?
They will know. If they're made for it, they will know. They will know. So, they will do it, and they will just say, "This is me." And they'll have a natural talent towards it. And these things you can't... it's from God. You can't learn this.
Should they try a lot of sports to discover the one?
If that's what they want to do in life, they should, yes. But not everybody wants to be a sportsman. We all have our different goals. The main thing is, if you want to be good at something, then you have to put all your energy into this. You know this. Mm-hmm. If you run a business, you have to be all in with all your energy, all your thoughts, all your intentions towards that goal, whatever that is. And you have to have a talent for it as well. So let's say I liked basketball when I was young. Well, I could have practiced all day long. I would never be a great basketball player because I don't have that innate talent. So you have to have that in whatever sport. If it's going to be soccer or basketball or running or bodybuilding or anything, you have to have a natural talent towards it. And that usually becomes pretty obvious early on.
How much did you train daily?
Good question, and I'm going to give you a surprising answer because this is what everyone expects me to say something different. 4 hours a week maximum with weights. Per week.
4 hours?
You see? Your reaction is confused. 4 hours a week.
When? One hour a day. When you were a kid or?
No, when I was Mr. Olympia. I was doing 1 hour four times a week.
It's impossible.
Yeah, but it's not impossible because
hours?
I'm sitting here and I'm telling
you. In 1 week?
Yes.
When you were on my posters in my room?
Yes. Because you're assuming, you're making the assumption.
What did you do in that 1 hour?
Some very, very intense training that if you do it with me, you're probably going to throw up within the hour. Because the key to muscle growth, the key to bodybuilding is the intensity mm-hmm. of the training, not the length, the volume of the training.
So I'm shocked, did you have breaks or you, I don't understand, 1 hour
and yeah.
you were Mr. Olympia.
Exactly. And the other guys were training much more than this. And that's not efficient.
For example, Ronnie Coleman, how much did
he probably trained for maybe 2 hours a day, 6 days a week.
2 hours a day?
Yeah, that would be the
six
upper
days
end,
a week.
The upper end of maybe a bodybuilder's training volume. Because it's not all
about
the
training.
What's
the explanation for this?
The explanation is the key to trigger muscle growth is the intensity of the exercise. So you're going to take the exercise to the absolute limit, the absolute failure, but then you have to recover from it. So very short, hard, intense workouts is the key. And if it was the volume of training, I would train 10 hours a day, 12 hours a day. But that's not the way to build muscle. It's short workouts. And I was Mr. Olympia training 4 times a week for 1 hour. So nobody needs to do more than that. I tell people, and I've proven it many times to people, if you have 30 or 40 minutes twice a week, you can totally change your physique, your health, your life. That's all you
need. And training 5 days a week, 1 hour,
yeah.
50 minutes.
Okay,
and look at my muscles.
Well, next time I come and we have time, we go in the gym and I show you because we can talk about it all day long. But when you go in the gym and you train with me, you're going to understand. Because after 45 minutes, you're going to be on the floor. You're going to want to throw up. That's how hard you have to train. And then the rest of the job for a bodybuilder is outside the gym. It's not, I train for 1 hour a day and I'm finished. Got to eat 6 times a day. Got to sleep 10 hours a day. Have to take supplementation, all this stuff. Rest, enough rest outside the gym. Got to control your stress levels so that you can recover from the training so that you're calm. Most of the job in bodybuilding is outside the gym to recover from this training. When you go to the training,
like
you're beating
business.
Yourself up, you're damaging your body, you're breaking it down, and then it's going to rebuild. And you need time and you need food and rest for this.
So I'm not able to sleep enough. What should I do to rest? Okay, I'm training.
Yeah.
I don't speak about my training in your face in 1 meter. But,
well, normally,
What's wrong with this?
Normally, when you can't sleep, it's because your nervous system is overstimulated. This could be from training, but I doubt it. If you're just training 1 hour, then it's normally mental. You know, you have businesses, you have many things going on, and it would be my guess that you need to. Keep your stress levels down and calm your mind. So meditation is a great tool.
How did you calm your mind before the competition?
Well, a competition when I was competing is basically something that's on my mind every day of the year before I get to the competition. And I'm visualizing myself at the competition, how I'm going to behave, how I'm going to be, how's my mood going to be. This is important, but when I went to a competition, I was always feeling very confident because I know that I did absolutely 100% that I could for that competition. I couldn't do any more. I couldn't be any more strict with my diet. I couldn't be any more correct with the training. I tick every box. So I would be pretty relaxed when I went to the competition because I've done everything I can do, and the outcome is now out of my hands. Mm-hmm. But the key to everything is the right mindset. For instance, every single workout for me was the most important workout I'll ever do. I must today do the best workout ever. Every time I went to the gym, and I know exactly what exercises I'm going to do, what order I'm going to do them in, what did I do last week, what should I do this week. I'm guessing when you go to the gym, you don't know this. You don't know what you did last week.
I don't know what your goals are today. Strategy. Did you have strategies?
Absolutely, yes, you have to have a strategy. You can't be the best at anything without having a strategy. Do you have a strategy for your business?
Of course, business, yes, a plan.
You have a business plan?
Of course.
You have projections?
Yes.
It's exactly the same with the body. And keeping records of the workout. If you change something, change the workout or change the diet, you make a note. And then you analyze, you see, is this positive or this is negative? If it's negative, it's gone. Everything's a strategy. It's like a military planning for everything.
How did you feel to be the strongest man in the world? Not the strongest, the biggest. Did you feel the strongest or the biggest? Strong and big, two important words
really.
For men.
The best bodybuilder in the world is a combination of muscle mass, obviously, muscle size, muscle condition, which is very low body fat, and proportions of the body, so that everything is kind of matching fairly equal. And a combination of those things is the winner. So I had different goals at different points. I wanted to be British champion, and then I wanted to be a professional. Then when I was a professional, I wanted to place in the top three of my first professional contest, and I got second. And then I wanted to be Mr. Olympia. So every time is different goals, you know.
Do you think you did this for your soul or for your ego?
Both. You know, I wanted to show the world that I was somebody, somebody special. And it's almost like I knew I was going to do this. It sounds strange, but I knew, something inside me knew I was doing something special. And when I got to be bodybuilding, I was like, this is it. This is the thing that's going to change my life. So, yes, I want people to respect me and what I did. So I guess that's ego. But it's also for the soul. I wanted to exercise. It's like mastery over myself. You know, mastery over your, wow, this exercise, this training is really hard. I don't want to do it. No, I'm going to do it. Oh, I'm feeling really hungry and tired and I want to eat this thing. No, I can't eat this thing now. It's control over myself. And now I see the whole thing from a different perspective. That winning Mr. Olympia six times gives me a platform. People listen to me. I'm sitting here and you're talking to me now because I'm six times Mr. Olympia. If I wasn't, I wouldn't be sitting here. I wouldn't be talking to you. So I wouldn't have a voice. Now I have a voice and I talk on many subjects, and the goal is to try to help people. I'm fortunate enough that I was able to do this. I did a lot of work, but I had the physical tools and everything like that to be able to achieve this. Now I have a platform, I'm talking, and I try to spread some love, some positivity, some knowledge to the people that's listening and inspire them to be better and talk about myself. Not just the good things, the bad things as well, the dark things. And people can relate to that, and it helps them on their journey to see that, hey, you know, I'm not the only one here that's depressed or suffering or having problems or having losses. It can happen to all of us. And if they see somebody like me saying, hey, it happened to me, it's easier for them, I think.
Have you ever hate yourself?
Hate? No.
Feel hate? When you look into the mirror.
No, I never feel hate.
You love yourself.
Yeah, well,
you have a good relationship.
I hate myself anyway, yeah. I feel good, I even feel good now. And people say, hey, you were this guy, you know, the bodybuilder, huge Mr. Olympia, you don't miss to be that guy now, you're not so big, and not at all.
I don't know why sometimes when I'm looking to these bodybuilders, I feel I see kind of victims. I don't know why I feel this.
Well, I don't know. I mean, everybody has their own story. You know, some people start from a point of lacking. I'm not big enough, I'm not strong enough, or something like that. But it wasn't the case for me, because I was already bigger and stronger than my friends. So I was not coming from that. I was coming from, I want to do something with my life. I want to be something more than is around me, and the whole world is... I can be anything I want. Mm-hmm. The whole world is full of potential, and I found the thing, and... with bodybuilding, okay, I earned some money. It's not like a football player. But the one thing I had was I've traveled all around the world. Mm-hmm. And I know people. I can still go now if I want to go to China or Japan or Brazil or Australia. I have friends there all around the world, because there's a community of bodybuilding and professional bodybuilders. We travel around to make appearances and seminars in different countries. So I achieved my goal of... this kid from Birmingham in UK wants to travel all around the world, and how I'm going to do that. I did it, and I have friends as well. So when you go to a country and you have friends there, it's different from going even as a tourist. So I would never have done that without bodybuilding.
Why do you think the men and the boys love muscles? And why the women tell that they don't like boys with huge muscles?
Well, you know, it's strength is associated with masculinity, mm-hmm. right? We're men, and in the past we had to hunt or we had to fight battles. That was the role of the men, and you have to protect the family. So strength, fighting skills, all these things is seen as a sign of masculinity. So a lot of guys want to lift weights to get bigger and stronger because of this. And as far as the women going, look, if you go out into the street now and you take a picture of a bodybuilder in a contest condition with all the veins sticking out like this, and you say to women, do you like that? They go, no, I don't like that. But it's a different story when you're just with your clothes on or something like that. You know, not in this extreme conditions. So... I think women like guys that are in shape and they're fit, but bodybuilding, competitive bodybuilding, is an absolute extreme. So maybe it's too much for a lot of people, women included.
How did you restrict your emotions when you saw, for example, a cold beer and you had competition? Or, I don't know, a great cake in front of you? How did you stop? How could you train yourself not to see this?
I see it, but it depends how I see it. I see it as an enemy. I see it as an obstruction to reaching my goal. So I have no interest in it.
But I also, after the competition, I also see it the same. It's an enemy, but I'm eating it.
Yeah, but it's like, for me, my life depended on it.
Why?
Because it's my profession, and I'm going to win. And do I want to win Mr. Olympia, or do I want to eat this piece of cake? Easy choice. I'm going to take Mr. Olympia. So that's how you have to look at it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's more difficult for the average person, but your goal has to be greater than the temptation. If it's not, you won't do it. Yeah. So I didn't go out at night. I didn't go drinking. I didn't go chasing women. I didn't eat the cake. I give many things up, many sacrifices to achieve the goal. And it's, for me, it's a simple question. Is your goal greater than this? Yes. Okay, then I don't do that.
You know? What would you say to someone who, for example...
And it's like an internal pride.
Internal pride.
You know, internal pride. Like, I'm weak and I'm failing if I'm going to eat that piece of cake. Let the other guy eat it, who's going to be second to me, or third, or fourth, or whatever it is.
How could you convince a man who is smoking to stop it?
I can't. He has to convince himself. Mm-hmm. I can give him information, but I mean, it's not difficult. Everybody knows smoking is bad for you. Mm-hmm. So it's their choice. I'm not trying to convince anybody about anything. I've tried to convince people that If they train in the gym, first of all, they don't need to spend a lot of time. We've discussed this already. If you can go twice a week for 30 or 40 minutes, if you do it really correctly, this is going to have a huge effect on your life and on your health. And not just about the aesthetics of, oh, I look better, I've got abdominals for the beach or something like that. I'm talking about mental health. Mm-hmm. Yeah, human beings, throughout the whole evolution, they had to be physical. They had to work, they had to hunt, they had to do something. Our body is designed to do that. And our mind is designed to be engaged in some kind of challenge. When life is too easy and we can just sit on the TV and eat pizza and watch, you're not going to be functioning physically or mentally at your best. And your experience of life is not going to be so good if your body's not working. This is the only thing we're moving around in, right? It's like we're the driver, but this is a car. And if your car is breaking down and one tire is flat and so on, it's not going to be a very nice drive. So that's the comparison I make.
A lot of experts say that the fight is in the kitchen, not in the gym. What do you think?
It's both. You know, you have to train. You have to train hard to stimulate growth. Okay, when you first start going to the gym, your body's not used to it. So the first 6 months or maybe it's 12 months, you're going to get results without really, you know, pushing to the limit. But after that, you have to push to the limit to stimulate that reaction in the body. Your body doesn't change for no reason. Muscle growth is a reaction to stress. So let's say that you're doing an exercise with 50 kilos.
Okay.
You went to the gym last week and you did an exercise with 50 kilos. If I come back next year and I say, hey, Stefan, how are you? How much weight you're lifting in this exercise? And you tell me, 50 kilos. I guarantee you, you will look exactly the same. There will be no change. You have to always put more stress, more weights, etc., etc., to get the change. And then you're damaging yourself when you're in the gym, in a way. Afterwards, you have to recover, you have to repair. You don't build a house without the bricks. You can't build muscle without protein, without sufficient calories. So it's both. Training without nutrition won't work. Nutrition without training won't work. So you cannot really separate them and say one's more important than the other. You need to do both.
What do you think about veggie style, vegetarian style?
Vegetarian style is... I understand why people might want to do that for... spiritual, ethical reasons, animals, and so on.
Except this.
But if you're talking about functionality, then
yes.
you're making it really...
Can I make muscles?
Really difficult. Really difficult. Okay. Yes, maybe you can do it if you take a lot of protein supplements. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to get sufficient protein to recover from your workouts. Yes, you've got protein in lentils and beans and rice and broccoli and stuff like that, but in order to get sufficient protein, you will be eating way too much carbohydrates and then you'll put on the fat. So just being neutral on it, not being any morality here or anything like that, then you're gonna have a hard time doing that.
What's the importance of dreaming, to have dreams in your life?
A dream is a goal, and if you want anything, first of all, you have to imagine it. You have to believe that it's going to happen, and you have to direct your thoughts to that. I pretty much was thinking about bodybuilding 24 hours a day, because even when I was sleeping, sometimes I was dreaming I was in a workout, or I was dreaming I was in a competition. So, you know, I had no rest. Even when I was sleeping, I was thinking about it, so it happened. But there are people out there with dreams that don't happen as well. You know, you have to have it's like the physical and the mental side of it. If you don't have the physical, you know, I can dream about being 2 meters tall, but I won't be. It won't happen. There's physical limitations, is what I'm saying. You know.
When was the worst moment in your life? The most difficult?
I think the most traumatic was when I lost my father. I was 13 years old and just had no concept of life and death, and that you can lose people, and my father was young, and why did it happen, and all this stuff.
But
I think it made me a very independent person. I was 13 when my father
passed.
And he? 42.
Ooh.
Yeah. My
in
father
an accident
was.
Or he was.
No, he died from a heart attack.
Oh my God.
Smoking 40 cigarettes a day, which was pretty normal in those days. So my father died when
he was.
I was
big.
No, he was
big.
not from the gym. I got my genetics, if you like, from my mother. My mother had really a physique with never going to the gym. She rode horses, but she just had that structure of wide shoulders and long legs, and she was very muscular. Naturally, it was just genetic. So I got the genes from there.
Maybe you felt weak when your father died and you wanted to prove him that you can become strong?
Could be something to do with it, yeah. I think every boy wants their father to be proud of them. So maybe I wanted to show my father that wasn't there. Maybe I wanted to show the world, you know, what I can do. And a little bit like to the world. You know, I used a lot of anger in my workouts, which could have been a bad thing for me. A lot of young guys, they're angry, they're confused, and they're getting into violence and criminality and gangs. That would have been, it was a turning point for me when I went to the detention center, which way I'm going to go.
Did you think about your father when you were training?
Not consciously. No, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel now? You are 60.
Yeah.
You're afraid?
I feel great. What's to be afraid of?
I don't know. Not to be young.
No. You know...
You're in shape now?
I think my body feels like it's 40.
Oh.
I feel like a good, very fit 40-year-old, and I work out with guys that are always younger than me. And I have this test. We go up the mountain in the bike, with the bikes, mountain mm-hmm. bikes, up the, mm-hmm. in Spain. And as long as I can still beat the guys who are 28 and 30, I'm doing okay. So,
oh my God.
I feel great.
How much do you train now?
I do lightweight training because I have shoulder injuries, so I can't lift too much weight. I do upper body once a week, lower body once a week. I do Pilates or yoga once or twice a week, which is more about mm-hmm. the mobility and the stretching. And I do some cardio work on the bike. So mm-hmm. I do a little bit mobility stretching, a little bit strength, a little bit cardio. I do a mix.
What about your food now?
My food now is, I do intermittent fasting. So I only eat twice a day from maybe 2 or 3 o'clock and then 7 or 8 o'clock. So I have 2 meals a day. And
why it's important now not to eat a lot? You say 2 times a day.
Because I used to eat a lot, 6 times a day. And it's not the healthiest thing to do for a long term. So now I'm... My whole reason to train now is not to look a certain way. It's to be as healthy as possible and to have a good quality of life as I'm getting older. I would like to be able to go hiking in the mountains and ride my bike and do all these things when I'm 70 or 75 or whatever, you know, God willing, if I get to that point.
When you did win Mr. Olympia, what about your relationships with your wife?
My wife was very supportive of the whole process. And we had a son as well. I mean, very early, before I even started lifting weights, we had a son very early. So we became a family unit after a few years, and we worked as a team. You know, she understood what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Plus, I was very successful very quickly. Mm-hmm. Literally from my first contest, I went to a novice contest, and I was told, like, what the hell are you doing in the novices? Who are you? Where did you come from? You're the best bodybuilder in the country. I was like, what? I didn't believe it. Now I see the pictures now. I can see what they're talking
about. So it was important, or it's important to have a woman near you to support you?
It's important to have support. Yeah, it's mm-hmm. very difficult to do everything on your own, you know? So it would be the true for any venture or any sport. I think it's important to have support, whatever that is. You know, it might be just your family or your mom or somebody, some mm-hmm. people behind you to some degree. It's important, I think.
How did you manifest your gratitude for yourself after you were training so hard?
I think I have the gratitude now. I'm not sure I had it at the time, because you're never satisfied, you know? Doesn't matter what you did. You always want to do more. You always want to push more. You always want to try to get bigger. So I got to be Mr. Olympia That was one goal. Okay, so now I'm the top of the mountain. I'm the best. What can I do now? Try to be the best ever, or try to push the boundaries more. Let's see, how big can we get? How muscular, how ripped can we get? There was always a challenge to try to do more. Whether I achieved it or not is another question, but that was the goal, to always try to be able to be better than before.
How did you feel to be on the top of the mountain and maybe a little bit depressed because you had no other goal to touch?
Not really, because the goal was, even though I can't get any higher, you're on the top, but it's to try to stay there. Now everybody wants to beat you, so you got to maintain and try to push my own boundaries, you know, compete against Orion now. You beat the other guys. Try to be better than yourself last year was the goal.
How did you feel the next day after you finished the story? The next day?
Absolutely exhausted.
Exhausted.
Absolutely. You know, to get in shape for a bodybuilding contest, you have contradictory goals of building or maintaining muscle and really reducing the body fat to the lowest level and being slightly dehydrated. So it looks great on the picture maybe, but trust me, those guys don't feel so good at that point because it's not really healthy to have the body fat so low and to be dehydrated and so on. So, you know, we've had people that have passed away trying to do this.
Mm-hmm. But the importance of drinking water, how many bottles?
I don't really measure how much water I drink, but it's definitely important to clean your system. But you could drink too much as well. I know people that are obsessed with drinking too much water, and then you're losing electrolytes and minerals with too much water. So I never had I must drink this much a day. I just simply drink water when I'm...
Because everybody tells that water is the most important in this process. Water,
you
sleeping...
You mean to get ready for a competition?
No, in general.
Well, I just drink water when I'm thirsty. I didn't have I must drink X amount a day. It was not very important for me.
Can we speak a little bit about visualization? Because it's very important for me.
Yeah.
Can you describe the process of visualization?
Okay, so...
What does it mean to a professional?
Well, it's like making a movie in your mind. Mm-hmm. So I would use my records that I had from the gym. This is what I did last week. Okay, so I've got everything that I did last week in this workout. So I take some time, I sit down, I look, this is what I did last week. Okay, this is what I'm gonna do today. And I picture it in my mind. I'm there in the gym, I'm there, I'm wearing this shirt, I'm wearing these clothes. What I'm gonna wear
today.
Did
you describe in details?
Yes, details is important. So I'm wearing this shirt, these pants, and I'm in the gym, and I'm gonna lift this weight. Last week I did 8.
In your mind.
I watch myself doing 9. Yeah? So I make the whole workout in my mind before I go to the gym. And then when I go to the gym, I've already done this. I know exactly what I'm doing, exactly what my goals are. And I would say 99 point something, people go to the gym. Okay, what should I do today? I'm doing chest. I should maybe do this one and this one and this one. Yeah, okay. No goals, no structure, and the same thing with the competition. I see myself at the competition. I see how my mood is going to be. I see how I'm going to conduct myself.
You did visualize energy when you were receiving the title?
Absolutely, yeah.
That moment?
Yeah, all of it.
Wow.
All of it. So you're feeling the emotions even as well. Not just the picture, but you're feeling it as well. This is...
And that emotions help you.
This is the key to manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Not, I would like a red Ferrari, please, universe. No. How would you feel if you're sitting in this Ferrari? How will your emotions be if you're sitting and project this and project this and project this?
Amazing.
This is more a key than an actual picture. Universe doesn't understand picture, it understands emotions, feelings, thoughts.
Do you believe in the power of attraction?
Yeah, it's like the world is a mirror. The world is a mirror of your thoughts and you know your energy and your thoughts. It's like you're sending out a certain frequency, you're receiving a certain frequency back in events, people, opportunities, synchronicities, things like this. We were talking earlier on about when I was a kid, I had a pony, I had a horse, and his name was Shadow. Mm-hmm. And then I did my first competition in bodybuilding, and it was a big impact, and they did a big article about me in the magazine. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're going to call this guy the Shadow.
Shadow.
Because he's very mysterious. He comes to a competition and he disappears, and he doesn't want mm-hmm. to see anybody, he doesn't want publicity, and so he's like a shadow. So, wow. That's one of life's little synchronicities that you can see if you're looking.
Do you believe in luck?
No. I don't believe in luck. I believe in energy, and you attract what you give out, so...
What about if no one saw you in a competition?
That would be because I wasn't winning it. Mm-hmm. If I'm winning or I'm getting first or second, a lot of people are going to notice it, so I don't consider it luck, or you could say, in English we say, you make your own luck. So it's not luck. You made it happen. I made it happen. It's nothing to do with luck.
Maybe God loves you. Loved you.
Yeah.
Do you believe in God?
Well, that depends what you define as God. You know, I don't believe God is a separate entity from us. It's somewhere away from us. This is what religion teaches you, because they want to control you. God's over there. You're here. And you've got to make it back over there. And by the way, we're the way that you do that. You come through us. Mm-hmm. No, God is in every one of us. Mm-hmm. We're all aspects of God. Just like you have billions of cells in your body, we're all cells of God. So you're God, I'm God, she's God. We're all aspects of God, because God is consciousness having an experience in this dimension of physicality, three-dimensional mm-hmm. reality, having an experience here by being physical. So, a British guy, he said one time, we're all God playing hide and seek with himself or herself, mm-hmm. you know? So we're God, but we forgot that we're God, because if we knew, there would be no game here. This game would be pointless.
Before the competition, did you pray? God,
no,
help me?
No, I didn't pray to God in that formal way, but, you know, I was thankful for the abilities that I had and the opportunity to be able to do this. I realized it was something very special. But I didn't pray, and I, you know, you're talking about Dorian Yates when he's 30 years old, now I'm 60, so I have 30 years of more life experience and understanding of spirituality, because I'm interested in it and I spend a lot of time studying it, and that's the conclusion I came to. Like, we're all the same thing. There's no separation. We're not different. Mm-hmm. We think we are different, separate, living separate lives, separate experiences, but it's all going to the same place, the same mainframe, if you like.
What's your biggest fear now?
I don't have fear. It's not useful.
I don't believe you.
I don't have fear.
You are not a machine.
No, I'm a man, but I realize, what should I be afraid of? That we're having an experience. We're having a game. And could I be afraid of dying? Mm-hmm. No, because I don't believe I die. I believe this body expires, but the spirit is eternal. So it always continues in some form or another. Energy never disappears. It just goes from one place to another. You know, if you have a TV, yeah, and you have the TV turned on, you have the electric turned on, and you're watching the TV, one day that TV will break down, no? TV is gone. But the power, the electric, that powered the TV is always there. Mm-hmm. That's the same, that's my belief. So I don't see the point to be afraid of anything.
What the heaven looks like to you?
It's not a place, it's just an absolute...
It's not a gym.
No.
No.
It's not heaven's not physical, so how can it be a gym? It's not physical, mm-hmm. it's a...
Metaphoric.
It's a consciousness. God is consciousness, mm-hmm. and we're consciousness in a 3D physical reality, having experience here for learning some things and some lessons, and then we move on. So I'm actually looking forward to go to the next episode.
Your wiseness is at 60, but when you were at 30,
yeah,
you were not conscious enough.
No, not to this level. No, you know, if I had the same level of consciousness at 30 and I had the same at 60, I think I must have wasted 30 years. We're here to evolve, to develop, to learn, and that's the adventure, right? Mm-hmm. Life's an adventure. There's always going to be something else to learn, and you're always going to be learning. So I'm not sitting here saying I know everything. I'm just saying this is what I know. This is what I understand from now, from my point of view.
How do you succeed in living the moment? I see you are very relaxed. You look to be happy.
Yeah.
I don't know, meditative, healthy. How do you do?
I've done a lot of work on myself, mm-hmm. on my spirit, on my traumas, on my fears. I meditate. I've done a lot of work with psychedelics, with mm-hmm. Ayahuasca. I had my own ayahuasca camps. I've done about 20 ayahuasca ceremonies.
You have 20 ayahuasca?
Yeah, 20 ceremonies, like 20 days.
You recommend it?
I recommend it if you're thinking about it and you're feeling the call that you want to really explore yourself and you want to learn more about the reality. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. If you feel that, you know, if you feel that call, if you feel you're ready for that, it's like, you know, we have a view of reality. Right? Mm-hmm. What reality is, what's up, what's down, what's good, what's bad. And this information comes from your life experience and whatever information you've been given by your parents, by your society, by the schools and everything like mm-hmm. that. And you have a picture of reality that this is like this and that. When you do psychedelics, this box that you have around your head is totally blown away. Mm-hmm. And you have the ability to have your own mind open to much more information, and you're shown a lot of things that will advance your spirit and maybe helpful to you, and maybe reviewing traumas or even, you know, a lot of things that affect us, and traumas are in the subconscious. So mm-hmm. how can you deal with something if you don't see it? So it can be shown to you so that you can process it and deal with it.
What was your biggest trauma?
The biggest lesson I learned, because one time I took ayahuasca and I couldn't move. I physically couldn't move. So the communication I was getting is, what will you do now? Now you can't move. I have to ask for help. Yes. Big challenge for you, eh?
Strongest man in the world,
yeah,
to ask for help.
But now you can't move. We took away your physicality. We took away your armor, which, you know, build all this muscle and this strength. It's kind of, in a way, it's an armor, like to protect yourself. So we take all that away. Who are you now? What are you going to do? And I had to ask for help from a little girl. Please, can you help me? Can you guys help me to get up? Can you help me? I'm feeling sick. And it was a lesson for me that it's okay to ask for help sometimes, because all my life I tried to be the strong one and help other people, but I don't need help, and you know,
it's amazing.
Yeah, so that was shown to me. That was a valuable lesson. Mm-hmm. But many things is very complex, psychedelics, and what you see and what you feel is very hard to describe, and again, it's going to be an individual experience. So I might have a totally different experience to you at the time.
I have a question for you. Do you think you have to suffer to become wise? You have to suffer to understand, to be more conscious?
Well, all the times in my life when I've suffered, I would have do anything for this not to be happening right now. I don't want to be here. I don't want this to happen. But later on, afterwards, then I say, oh, whew, I learned a lot from that. There was a lot of lessons learned there. So nobody wants to go through these traumatic things and these stressful things, but normally it's a lesson contained inside. And if you don't get the lesson, next time is going to be harder, though. You know, until you wake up, like somebody said once, you know, if God wants to get your attention, he drop a little stone in the water. Not listening? A bigger one, a bigger, and one day, a big one until you get it, you know. So I think these stressful things in life are there for our own education. Mm-hmm. But hopefully I don't need some anymore. I don't need, hopefully, but who knows.
What's the key to learn?
The key to learn, I think, is to have an open mind. Because you can't learn anything if you're already closed to some suggestion. Mm-hmm. You have to be open and able to analyze and assess and weigh it up and always be open to the possibility that you are not right. Mm-hmm. You know, your point of view at this point, time may be able to change if you have different information or you see things from a different perspective. You know, because if we look at this camera from this angle, it looks this way, but the guy looking from the side will have a different opinion because it looks different from over there. So you have to keep this in mind as well.
I think it's dangerous to feel this pride when you are the biggest and you are the champion. Not about the humble in you.
I think
it's important to be humble in your life, or not?
No, it's definitely important. First of all, believe in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. But to be humble.
It's very easy to say, believe in yourself.
Yeah.
It's very
believe
complicated.
Believe in yourself and what you want to do.
I made millions and I'm not able to believe in myself, as you tell.
But who made the millions?
I made the millions.
So why don't you did it already? Why don't believe in yourself?
I'm telling you, it's very hard to feel inside that I'm good enough.
Well, I felt that was, the drive to get there in the first place can come from this feeling of not good enough or lack or something like that. So probably I used some of that along with anger to drive, to fuel this obsession to where I want to get. But I feel I'm in a place now where I feel very comfortable with myself. And yes, I was the best bodybuilder in the world for 6 years. But I can't fix a light bulb. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm useless at some things. So, you know, I don't look down on other people because I think I'm better. I'm better at bodybuilding than you, for sure. Yeah, I know that. But does it make me somehow a better person than you? No, we're all coming from the same place, I believe. You know, we're all equal in a way. And everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses. I was just very good at one thing, so I use this to try to remain humble and use my position now to help other people, help elevate them, help them believe in themselves, help them have a better life. And that's what makes me happy now when people come to me and say, Dorian, you told me this, or I heard you speak about this, or you helped me with my training and my diet, and now I feel like a totally different person, and I'm not depressed anymore, and my kids respect me now, and all this feedback that I get off people, this is rewarding. Now I'm trying to give back, not just if bodybuilding was totally for me. You know what I mean? It's a very selfish pursuit. You know, it's about your body and your rest and your food and everything like that. So now I'm seeing things from a different point of view, and I achieved my goal in life that I wanted to achieve. I'm very proud of it and happy about that. So I think I feel very fulfilled in that aspect. Like, I don't really need to prove anything to anybody, including myself, at this point.
What's the difference between saving people and helping people? You told me you want to help people.
Yeah, help them, because
don't you think you try in your subconscious to save them in a way? Because you weren't able to save your father?
I don't think so. I just want to help people, and with my knowledge that I have, I feel a little bit frustrated sometimes because I see people going to the gym and making efforts, and they're not getting the reward because they're not doing it properly. So that, you know, in effect, they're wasting their time. You know, you're wasting 4 hours a week already. You could be doing something productive with that. I can train you for twice a week and you will be developed much better than this. So you're already wasting 4 hours a week, so I could save you 4 hours at least, and you can do something else with those 4 hours.
Where should I start? Okay, let's say this is the first moment in my life when I'm entering the gym. What should I do first?
Learn
not technical.
No, learn
for
to
my
do,
mind maybe.
Well, you have to have some goals. What do you want? Why are you coming to
the
gym?
I have it. To have, for example, to have not six pack, but to have 40 centimeter in my hand.
So this is your goal, then?
Yes, this is my goal. Yes.
Okay, so you have a goal, and you're going to figure out how to get there and how long it's going to take you realistically, and to get this goal, 40 centimeters. What are they now? What's your arms now? You want 40? What are they now?
37.
37. So you want three more centimeters?
Yes.
We can do this
you
in 6 months.
You told me and I will do it for sure.
We can do it in 6 months.
6 months, okay.
Yeah, you need to start training more efficiently, you need to train more intense, and you need to train less. And I don't know about your diet, so that's a whole different story. You need to make sure you get enough protein, make sure you're eating regularly. You should be eating 4 or 5 times a day, and not just sometimes, like every single day.
This is hard.
Yeah, this is hard. You know, I remember a story. A friend of mine, when we were young and we were bodybuilding, I was training for a British championship. And I didn't have any money, you know. All my money is just going on food, my rent, the gym fees, and all this stuff. So it was a big deal that my friend had a friend who had a Ferrari. Like, this was unheard of. Like, oh, look, he's got the Ferrari. And I said, I don't care. He said, what do you mean you don't care? I said, the Ferrari, you can buy it. This 40 centimeters arms, you can't buy this. You've got to put the work in. You've got to do it, you know. So you want something. It has value. You've got to pay the price. This time not in money, this time in dedication and hard work and everything. And you can do it. It just depends if you're prepared to do what it takes, if you have the commitment to do it. And no, you can't miss a meal today because you're too busy. No. If you do this, you're not going to get your goal. So you have to decide, this is what I would have to do to get to this goal. I'd have to go and train very hard, 3 times a week. I would have to eat 4 or 5 times a day. I would have to eat at least 200 grams of protein a day. And I will have to do it every single day, and I'll have no excuses. Then you get to your goal. If you don't, then you won't.
Yes, but my brain says to me, it's a sacrifice. You have to sacrifice. You have to sacrifice something.
No, you want the Ferrari, you have to sacrifice 200,000 euros. If you want the Ferrari, you want the biceps, you have to sacrifice some time and effort. And this is the truth. If you're not prepared to do it, be honest with yourself. I'm not prepared to put in that work. I'd like the 20 centimeter arms, but I'm not prepared to put in the work, so I'm not going to get them. It's up to you. You want it or you don't want it.
What should I do when I feel guilty? It kills me when I feel guilty.
What do you feel guilty about?
Because I've not been into the gym, because I'm not training enough, etc.
But you need to sit down and decide if this is a priority for you or not. You know, it's no good feeling guilty. Like, just sit down and say, do I want to do this, yes or no? Or I'm just going to accept that I do some training and I eat okay and I'll stay how I am. For me, it's logic. It's simple. You make a decision and you do it or you don't do it. And don't, you know, if you commit to doing it and then you don't do it, yeah, then you should feel guilty because you made a commitment for yourself. But you're a guy who's already built a business. You've done many things. So you're inside. You already know the process. You already know if I want to open another restaurant, if I want to open another business, I know what's required. I must spend this much time. I must do this. I must do that. Otherwise, my business will fail, right? If you're not taking care of your business, it will fail. If you don't take care of your training, you're not going to reach your goals. So it's a matter of, is this important enough for me to put the time and effort in and be honest, yes or no? If it's yes, do it. Go for it. Cook your meals the night before, 5 meals, put them in boxes, bring them with you. No excuses, I'm too busy. And you know, it requires effort, it requires time, it requires planning.
I can do it, of course I can do it.
You can do it if you want to do it. It's all a matter of if your desire is enough.
Do you think money is motivation, real motivation?
Yes, because money is a tool to change your life, to give you more freedom. So to a degree, it's a motivation, but in my experience, people that make it their only motivation, they're never happy because money is made of numbers and numbers is never ending. It can keep going, keep going, keep going. So if you're looking, I don't know in Romanian if it makes sense, but in English, you're looking for the gold at the end of the rainbow. You know, you spend your whole life trying to get to the end of the rainbow to find the gold. Well, you never get to the end of the rainbow and you never find the gold, so you're never happy. So for me, money is, yeah, it's important in this world, but it's enough to have what I want and to provide for myself and, you know, family and to be able to travel. For me, money is just freedom. As long as I can do what I want, go where I want to go, eat what I want to eat, and live what I want to live. Beyond that, it has no value.
What's the secret to connect to yourself, to the source in you?
I think this is an ongoing process to find out who you are, you know? Mm-hmm. Who are you really? That's a lifelong quest, and I feel like maybe I'm getting there now, you know? And mm-hmm. I feel good, I feel comfortable who I am and what my role is in this life, in this world right now.
How can we develop our patience? Because when you are trying to become world champion, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter the area. You have to be patient.
Well, you have to be patient, but not too patient.
I'm not
a world champion is a huge, you know, if you're just starting out, world champion is a huge thing, a huge goal, and it's so far away. So it's like climbing the mountain, you mm-hmm. know? A mountain is so big you can't even see the top, it's in the clouds somewhere. Mm-hmm. So you have to say, yeah, I want to get to the top of this mountain, which is in the clouds, one day, but how do I get there? I get there by getting to here, you know, base camp. And then from there, I get to there. And plan each step along the way. So you're focusing on these steps, little steps, little steps, little steps, so that one day you get there. If you're sitting at the bottom of the mountain and you say, I want to get there, but come on, look how far away it is. It's in the clouds, I can't even see it. There's no way I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. So you have to break it down into steps along the way. And then you reach step one, and you're like, wow, look, I reached step one, I did that. So I can get to two. Two is not so hard, and three, and so on. Mm-hmm. That's how you get there. If you're just looking at the destination from the beginning, it's overwhelming, really.
And after we arrive on the top of the mountain, we want to move that mountain. To move.
Maybe you should just sit at the top and I'm at the top, you know? Or maybe you're going to find another mountain to climb afterwards. You know?
But why? We are working a lot to touch the top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Work all our life, okay? And finally we arrive there. Why, when we arrive there, we are not able to be happy there?
Because you got to enjoy the journey. You know, the journey, mm-hmm. not the just getting there. The journey is a lesson. All along the way, you're learning things, you're developing more character, more knowledge, more strength. Every time you achieve something, you're getting stronger. But you have to also enjoy it, otherwise what's the point, you know? Enjoy your achievements, be proud of your achievements, because you did them for a reason, you know? You opened restaurants because you wanted to open restaurants, so great. I hope it brings you good quality of life and much satisfaction that you've achieved these goals, and you can, you know, be happy inside yourself. Yeah, I give everything and I did a good job, and I think that's rewarding in itself.
What was the importance of animals in your life and
well, you
in
know,
your success
yeah,
for life?
I grew up with animals because I grew up on a small farm. We had a few horses and chickens, and I had some ducks and dogs and cats and all that stuff. And then I moved to the city, and I had a couple of dogs, but I kind of lost touch with it. And then as I've got older now, now much more connecting back with the animals. I started horse riding again a couple of years ago, which I didn't do since I was 13 years old. So I'm horse riding. I'm involved with the local charity in Spain where I live that look after the homeless dogs. And I've been quite a few times to Africa for a safari. I've been gorilla trekking, the mountain gorillas, which is very endangered in Uganda and Rwanda. I've been there. Mm-hmm. So I just love animals, and I love that connection with the animals that they're so, I feel like they're just pure, mm-hmm. you know. And I have a dog, I have a cat at home, And in the future, maybe I'd like to get a horse again. And I just love the contact with the animals, the kind of communication and so on. I find them just very pure.
Okay. You know? Dorian, what is the city you love the most?
Wow, that's it's difficult. I really love where I live in Marbella in Spain. Cities that I like to visit, it's very difficult to single out one. I like London. I like Amsterdam. I mean, New York is is New York. It's an amazing place. And my wife's from Brazil, so we spend some time in Rio in Brazil. So there's a few places that I really like.
So I want to invite you in one of the most beautiful area in the world, Suceava.
Suceava?
Suceava, yes.
Okay, where is that? In Romania, I guess?
Yes, in Romania, of course.
Okay. Can I ride a bike there?
Yes, of course.
All right, then.
You love Suceava.
I come ride my
Will
bike
you come
in Suceava.
There?
If I have time, yeah, and you bring me there, I'll come take a look at it, as long as it's not cold.
It's cold, but it's fine. You will
in
love
the summer,
it.
I come.
Okay, thank you a lot for
Thanks for having me
here.
On the show.
Thank you.
Hope people enjoy it.